here with another episode of the Think and Grow Chick podcast. I'm super excited about this one. Kind of nervous though, because I'm going to be putting all my business out on Front Street. But welcome to my new old series, The Story of a Black Girl and Her Money 2.0. So consider this part one. So though this is a new series, it's actually an old series that I'm resurrecting from my YouTube channel. So if you go on my YouTube channel and you look at some of my first videos, I think I first recorded this maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Oh my goodness, I'm getting old. When I was in college, but I did a series of three videos called The Story of a Black Girl and Her Money. And so if you know my story, you know that I was in school. I almost flunked out because I wasn't going to class. I was trying to build this business. And so because I lost my scholarship, I ended up taking out a bunch of credit cards, you know, trying to rob Peter to pay Paul. And it ended up just blowing up in my face. And so when I needed to get back on track, I got really serious and I read Dave Ramsey and started paying down my debt and taking on a bunch of odd jobs and just got really serious about my personal finance journey. And so I did a little bit of documenting of that with these super old videos from 7 or 8 years ago. And I called the series The Story of a Black Girl and Her Money. And it was pretty funny because I just like literally came up with it one day. So that's a side note for those of you who are entrepreneurs or trying to build your brand and you're constantly taking forever to act on your ideas, dude, if you don't get up out of your chair and go do something. I literally was at my house and I was like working on something and I had this idea and I grabbed my camera. It wasn't a fancy camera. I grabbed my camera the second I had the idea and I just walked to Howard's campus and I just started interviewing random people on the street about their money. I just found a bunch of black women and was like, hey, I'm doing this series, The Story of a Black Girl and Her Money. Like, let's talk about money. A lot of people were cool with being on camera. Others were like, oh, I'll talk to you, but you know, just point the camera away from me so I'm not on camera. And that's what I did. So I definitely encourage you to check that out on YouTube so you can see my journey and where I came from. But now based on where I am with my finances, you know, 7 or 8 years later, I feel like it's time to resurrect the series to not only document my financial process and how I'm getting back to being more disciplined with my money, more on that in a little bit, but I'm really excited to bring you along the ride with me. So yeah, so these will be a series of podcast episodes. So make sure that you are subscribed to me. If you're listening to this on iTunes or SoundCloud, make sure you're subscribed / following me so that when I do new episodes of this particular series, you will be the first to know. So why am I resurrecting this? Why do I feel it necessary to talk about my finances and kind of document it and do a little reality TV style or reality podcast style on my finances? Why? Well, I'm resurrecting this because I am personally embarking on a journey to get tighter with my money. I've been a little loosey-goosey lately, honestly, for a few years. Not in a way where anything's bad, and I'll talk about specifics in a second, but I mean, you know, we have savings and all that good stuff, but we could just be tighter, just more on point. I don't necessarily feel like, you know, that chick who is like bossing up in her finances. I feel like the woman who's got some systems in place and, you know, nothing's going wrong, but I'm kind of coasting and I'm not really taking advantage of the things that I could be taking advantage of. And honestly, I just haven't been that disciplined with my budget. In a way, I actually envy my financial discipline that I had when I made less money. So a lot of this has just come from, you know, you graduate school. At the time, I was working a 9-to-5 and I was making an excellent salary for my age and then quit my job and started my business and was really bringing in a lot of revenue. My husband does well. He makes, you know, a really great salary. So, I mean, it's not an excuse, but yeah, we just haven't been as disciplined or as tight as we could be because, you know, sometimes when you feel like you got it, it's like, oh, you know, I probably overspent there, but it's not a big deal because the money was in the checking account, right? You know, but I don't want to be that way. I'm a big believer that just because you make more, that's not an excuse to pay attention to your finances less. And yeah, for the last few years, my husband and I, you know, we've done the basics, meaning we live within our means. So, you know, we do not have a lifestyle that exceeds what we bring in. We have paid down debt. We have exactly a year's worth in our a year's worth of expenses in our emergency fund right now, which is, you know, great. We have 401ks. We have money in our 401ks. Like, you know, we save on a monthly basis. You know, we do everything that you're quote unquote supposed to do. We do the basics, right? But that's all we do. And I think that that's problematic because I feel like with our earning potential and the fact that we do live in Dallas right now, which is a city with really relatively low cost of living, we're looking at moving to LA one day. That's our ultimate goal, which is crazy expensive. So I'm like, well, dang, if we don't get our finances together here in Dallas, then we are going to have a problem in Los Angeles. But yeah, we live in a city with a low cost of living. We have great earning potential. I mean, yeah, it's cool that we have a year's worth in our emergency fund and we contribute to our 401k and we live within our means or whatever. But I feel like that's just kind of like doing the bare minimum. That's kind of surviving. That's not really thriving. And honestly, I've felt this way about our financial situation for a while. Like I said, I feel like we've kind of been coasting for a few years now, but I always neglected quote unquote tightening up on our finances because I just wanted to focus on building my business. So when I was working my 9-to-5 job, I was like, whatever, I'm hustling. Like your girl was hustling, trying to get those numbers up, my revenue in so that I could quit. And to be honest, I tend to veer more in the quote unquote, just make more money camp versus the cutting back camp. And I think that there's, you know, some truth to that perspective because you can only cut back so much. But I have definitely neglected the importance of reducing expenses. And it is really important. But up until recently, I wasn't really treating it that way. I was like, well, as long as you make more money and more is coming in, you know, we'll worry about the expenses later. It's more important to focus on bringing the money in. But what's the point of bringing in a bunch of money in, you know, if your bucket has holes in it? You know, you'll never be able to fill up the bucket. So now I recognize focusing on both aspects. And also a lot of things have come to a head recently that just in general make me want to get it together. So specifically, there's four things that I've encountered where I, you know, had a heart to heart with myself and said, you know what, you need to get back to where you were when you were a broke college student, and get tight on your finances. So the first thing that came to a head was what I'm calling my business reboot or my business epiphany. So I won't go into super detail because I know I've talked about it on a previous podcast and I've talked about it on some of my live streams on Facebook. But last year, I felt like I really got off track with my original business mission, even though last year was one of my quote unquote most financially successful years in terms of revenue brought in. And we'll talk about why I'm putting that in air quotes. Yeah, I made a lot of money. I made multiple six figures in revenue. And I felt like I was just focusing on developing programs and doing tactics that would help me move from, you know, multiple six figures to seven figures instead of actually focusing on my original business mission and doing what I was actually, you know, started this whole thing to do, and what I was actually passionate about. So I got caught up in the hype, drank my own Kool-Aid, got high on my own supply. And you know, just, I was honored to be around a lot of people who were doing way better than me. I, connected and, made friends with people who are doing seven figures. And I feel like I just got kind of caught up in that like guru track. Y'all know what it is. It's very popular in personal development and business development where they're like, well, if you want to be successful and want to make seven figures, you have to do these type of programs. You have to do this type of coaching programs and blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, okay, you know, I didn't know any better. I was like, well, I want to hit the seven figure level. And, you know, I'm happy that I'm connecting with people who are at such a high level in their own business. But it's really important that even when you get advice, you always filter it through your own beliefs, your own value system. in your own experiences. And so I really wasn't doing that. I was just like, yo, I want to hit seven figures. Let's do it. So I was taking on a ton of one-on-one clients. I was launching higher and higher price programs because that's the name of the game. Like, you know, charge more, charge more, charge more, charge more. And it just, I don't know. I just put a fever pitch. And it got to the point where towards the fall of last year, and definitely the winter, I felt like a lot of the stuff just wasn't really in alignment with what my brand was all about. And I honestly didn't want to do it. Like, I'm a creator. I love being creative. I love being accessible to my audience. And I wanted to go back to that place, but I felt kind of trapped because I had built all of this stuff and it was like, oh my goodness, you know, how do you unwind this? And on top of that, so much of my revenue, so that multiple six-figure revenue that I was bringing in, was tied up with expenses that I was now taking on. So, you know, I started scaling my business expenses lock and step with my increased revenue, which is not good. I was falling into the trap of basically making more and spending more at the same time. And it was crazy because I wasn't spending it on myself personally, but I was hiring full-time staff. I was paying other coaches. I was subscribing to a bunch of expensive software, and I was spending, no joke, thousands and thousands of dollars a month in advertising. Like, many months, it was like five figures that I was spending on Facebook ads just to keep all of this afloat. And so, like I said, I'm putting myself on Front Street. Just to be real, you know, I made over $330,000 in revenue last year, but I personally took home less than six figures. So I'll let you do the math on that. But my overhead was just out of control. And you know, at the time I was just, you know, taking it all in stride because I was like, well, I gotta grow this business. This is what you gotta do to get to seven figures. But, you know, I literally had a come to Jesus moment at the end of last year and just had a little heart to heart with myself and God and my husband and close friends and my community and just like, you know what? We're doing the most right now. Like, let's get back to basics. Let's get back to what I originally set out to do, which was help women think and grow into their potential in every area of their life. And, you know, how can we have the maximum impact without taking on a bunch of fluff and extraneous things that aren't necessary? So I just straight up killed revenue streams last year and at the beginning of this year that I just felt were out of alignment and that I just didn't want to do anymore. And I just started coming back to my senses and I started reviewing everything that I was paying for. And I realized I had so many unnecessary expenses in my business. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm paying for this subscription, it's $20 a month, I'm gonna cancel it. Like, there were some things like that, but there were other subscriptions or expenses that I had that were hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a month. And again, at the time, I felt comfortable taking all that on because I was, you know, going and blowing. Like, I was making lots and lots of money in terms of business revenue that was coming in. So it was like, oh, I can cover it. But just because you can cover it doesn't mean that it's a good idea. It doesn't mean that it's healthy for your business in the long term. And in general, you just, you know, the name of the game, yes, is to increase revenue, but it's also to reduce expenses. And I was totally ignoring the expenses part. So I have cut a lot of that back because I was basically just throwing money away. And what's the point of bringing in a ton of money if it's all just going to go out to, you know, expenses and you don't even get to enjoy half of it, which was the case for me. Like I said, I didn't even take home six figures last year, even though I brought in $330,000. So, yeah, I realized that you can't just play offense all the time, ladies and gentlemen. You got to play defense too. So yes, get out there and make more money, but don't get out there and make more money to the point where you're ignoring saving money and saving your expenses. So that whole experience was the first thing that made me think, okay, I need to get my finances together, not just in my business, but personally as well. And also I started thinking more about quote unquote financial defense or saving more money once I got pregnant. Because I realized that lifestyle, again, where I was just going and blowing and just kind of, you know, figure, oh, I'll just worry about the details later, you know, just gotta move, too busy. You know, that lifestyle wasn't gonna work if I wanted to be a fiscally responsible parent. So for instance, you know, we need to get a college fund started for our kid, but real talk, my husband and I, and this was before we had the baby, but even with the baby, and I'm an exclusively breastfeeding mom, so it's not even like I have to buy formula. But we literally spend anywhere from $800 to $1,000 a month on food. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. And the crazy thing is, quote unquote, we can afford it. And that's the problem. Just because I can afford to spend $1,000 a month on food for two people, which is insane. Slapping my own wrist right now. It's so terrible. Doesn't mean that that is something that I should be doing. And again, if I want to save for our son's college fund, like, we can't be spending $1,000 a month on food. Like, we got to cut that ASAP. Also, I really want to get into real estate, and it's my goal to buy my first rental property. It was actually my goal to do that this year. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that just with everything that's going on with the baby, and, you know, motherhood is hard, y'all. So I'm really just taking the rest of this year just to clean stuff up, reorganize, so like a lot of reorganization in my business, like I was talking about earlier, you know, in the house, like, and then with the baby, you know, I'm just using the rest of this year to just get adjusted and to lay a good foundation. And so then next year, I'll really be more aggressive in terms of taking new things on. So I am postponing my real estate goal in terms of buying my first rental property. I wanted to do that this year, but I'm going to wait to do that next year. But even with waiting to do it next year, if I want to do that, your girl can't spend $1,000 a month on food, okay? I need to cut this stuff back so that we can, again, do more than just the basics. So more than having an emergency fund, more than, you know, whatever, paying down debt and having our 401ks. Like, if we want a college fund and rental properties, we need to be tighter with our finances. Because there's just so much more that we could be doing. And it's also really sad. I feel guilty because even though we're doing like the textbook financial practices, we aren't really ascending to the next level. Like I said, because we have leaks in our bucket. And honestly, I feel like that is criminal given how much more money we make and we have than our parents had at our age. Speaking of our parents, that leads me to the third thing that's really got me hyped up on getting our finances together, which is generational wealth. So last night I watched a Netflix original. You guys got to check this out. It's this series called Explained, and it's just like what it sounds like. They explain all kinds of stuff, random phenomena in space, political stuff, whatever. And they had an episode that explained why there's such a huge wealth gap between blacks and whites in America. And even though I knew all of what they talked about, like I knew about redlining, I knew about, you know, the 40 acres and a mule and how that was, you know, rescinded. And, you know, I knew all of this stuff, but to see all of it laid out the way they explained it, first of all, it just made me angry, like burned me up again, like, oh, you know, this country played us, like, oh, this country owes African Americans so much. But anyway, I won't go down that track. But it also lit a fire in me to be like, you know what, while we're still, you know, fighting for our rights or whatever, and quote unquote, working out the details with the government, that's not an excuse not to do what we can do right now. And I've said it before on other podcasts, but I feel like my generation is the first generation that's truly free as an African American. Obviously slavery was several generations ago, but right after slavery we had, you know, Reconstruction, which was not good for black people, and then after that Jim Crow, which was not good for black people. And so, you know, my parents were born in the late 50s and 60s, right around, you know, the civil rights era, and then, you know, had to deal with discrimination in the 70s and the 80s. So I feel like as a young adult who was born in 1988 and, you know, came of age in the internet age and in the 2000s, I feel like my generation is the first generation to live in this country without, I mean, you know, there's still stuff, there's still discrimination and wealth gap and, you know, all that stuff, but it's not codified the way it was in slavery times and even in Jim Crow And during the civil rights era, now it's like, you know, if someone discriminates, like everyone knows that's bad. Like you have a case, you can, you know, do a lawsuit or whatever. You know, there's recourse at least available. And, you know, for the most part, people are at least trying to be aware of unconscious bias and, you know, all those things. So anyway, I say that to say it's not perfect, but I feel like my generation has a lot less barriers and has a semblance of freedom that my parents and grandparents and ancestors did not have, that it's criminal not to take advantage of your finances and maximize them to the fullest, because we are in a 300-year deficit in terms of creating generational wealth in our communities and providing that for our family. And this series on Netflix talks about that, how, you know, everybody else had a 300-year head start in America except for us. So I do not want to be the black couple that made a great salary and had a beautiful house and drove high-end, you know, imported cars and traveled to exotic destinations and wore really nice clothes, but behind closed doors, you know, doesn't have savings or little to no investment or is not building anything legacy wise. And I mean, I've said that for years to my husband. It's almost like an inside joke now, but I'm like, babe, we don't want to be that black couple. And I say that because, you know, that's a real phenomenon in our community too, just being real. You know, we talk a lot about poverty and underprivileged youth and the areas of our communities that have lack of access, but I feel like not enough people are talking about, you know, well-to-do African Americans, you know, those that live in Washington, D.C. or Atlanta, Chicago, Houston, L.A., New York, you know, y'all know, you know, who went to great schools and are getting these, you know, high-paying jobs at, you know, the best Fortune 500 companies. You know, what are we doing with our money? Like, we look good on the outside, but is everything tight behind the scenes? And for many people, that is the case, but I know for a fact, for many people, that's not the case. And I even saw that growing up with my parents' generation, you know, growing up in the Metro Detroit area with my mom being, you know, doing well in healthcare and my stepdad being a business owner. They had a lot of friends who, you know, were VPs of such and such company and, you know, had great positions and lived in really nice houses in the suburbs and drove Mercedes and had mink coats in the winter. And, you know, real talk now, financially, things are not the way they should be now that they are in their late 50s, entering their 60s. And I'm like, why? When, you know, y'all were making great money, clearly, because you were spending it on all this stuff, all this fancy stuff. So it's not like the money wasn't there. But why is it now that, you know, you're having to downsize, your retirement is not where it should be, or, you know, whatever. So growing up, seeing that, and then also, you know, living in D.C. and kind of seeing that, and even just being a professional in Dallas and recognizing that that is a reality for many well-to-do black couples, I don't want to be one of those couples. So watching that Netflix documentary, just it was another reality check of like, you know what, I owe this to my parents. I owe this to my grandparents. I owe this to my ancestors. I owe this to my community to get tight on my finances so that I can build generational wealth. The fourth thing that kind of set me on this kick is the fact that your girl is turning 30 next month. I'm recording this at the end of June. I am turning 30 at the end of July, July 28th. OMG, I'm turning 30. My 20s have slipped through my fingers like sand. Just kidding. I had a great 20s, but still, I'm turning 30. And I just feel like your 30s, you know, and I know I have older listeners, so, you know, I'm not saying this as a shot, you know, to y'all or anything like that. But me personally, I feel like your 30s are the last stop in terms of taking preventative measures before you have to start taking corrective measures. And what I mean by that is your 30s is still, you know, kind of a young adult, especially your early and mid 30s, like before you're 35. So But you're old enough where it's like the last stop. Like you're not in your early 20s, right? So in your 20s, you can kind of do stuff, and you do want to be taking preventative measures. But if you screw up or whatever, like you still got time. You still got a whole decade of, a runway to get it together. But your 30s, it's kind of like, after this, it's middle age, buddy. So you need to get it together. So I feel like the things that you do in your 20s and in your 30s, if you do them and you set up a good foundation, you won't have to worry about them in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. But if you don't take advantage of things in your 20s and 30s, but especially in your 30s, because I'm going to say it again, I feel like your 30s is the last stop. If you get on board in your 40s or in your 50s, you're going to find that you're going to have to be taking more drastic measures to correct things, because time is just not on your side. You didn't have the advantage of time to really grow what you were doing. This is not just with finances, but with everything, with fitness, with diet, with skincare. So I'm like, oh, I need to be drinking a gallon of water every day, because 30s is the last stop. Because if I wait until my 40s to try to get my skin together, I'm going to be looking at, needing to see a dermatologist, or needing maybe to have to get some sort of corrective surgery or something like that. Where if I just would have done it in my 20s and 30s, I could have prevented that. Ditto with your finances. If you buy your rental properties in your 20s and your 30s, or you make your investments in your 20s and your 30s, you contribute to your 401ks in your 20s and your 30s, you don't have to hustle up as much money in your 40s and 50s in order to catch up, because again, time is on your side. Diet-wise, if you're eating healthy in your 20s and your 30s, that's going to set you up nicely in your 40s and your 50s, where you're not having to do extreme crash diets or get plastic surgery or whatever, in order to get it together. So, yeah, hey, I know that's controversial, but I feel like your 30s is the last stop. Okay, board this train now, or miss out on the opportunity. So, I think I did great in my 20s in terms of my career and business and laying that foundation. And I think I did good in terms of getting out of the financial hole and, getting good at the basics. Like I mentioned, I do have an emergency fund, a year's worth of emergency fund. That's nothing to sneeze at. We've paid down considerable debt. We own our own home. We've done what all the textbooks say you're supposed to do. But now it's time to do more than that. Now it's time to really excel and take off. And so I want to do that in my 30s, preferably in my early 30s, so in the next few years. All right, so those are the four things that set me off: my business reboot, having a baby, thinking about generational wealth, and turning 30. And so now let's get into the specifics of what I actually want. I want to pay off my student loan. I owe about $30,000. It's a federal loan, thank goodness. So it's not Sallie Mae. It's not a private loan, but the interest rate is still pretty high. I think it's 6.8% or something like that. So I'm like, yo, I need to pay the sucker off. I've been out of school now for 6 years. Yeah, so 6 years of paying almost 7% interest. Not good. Need to pay that off. Also, I want to pay off my car. So I had a Honda that I loved, and it was paid off, and I drove it for years. But it was a coupe, and I got a baby now, so I didn't want to, be lifting the seat and doing all that stuff with the car seat. So I went out and bought a new car, bought my new Lexus, which I love. But we don't owe much on it. So we traded in my car, and we put a lot down. So I only owe, like, I don't know, maybe 14 or 15,000 on it. My car note is like really low. It's like 200 and something dollars, but that's if I want to take 4 or 5 years to pay it off, which I don't. I would like to pay my car off in between 18 and 24 months, actually. So yeah, that's something that we can definitely do, maybe even faster, if we stop spending $1,000 a month on food. Also, like I mentioned, I want my rental property, the first property I invest in. I want to spend less than 150,000, hopefully less than even 100,000. So if I could find a nice 70 or $80,000 property, that would be great. So with a 20% down, so I'm looking at roughly what is that? 16 to 30,000, depending on how expensive the house is. And I think I can do that. I plan on saving up for the majority of that investment through my business revenue, but still, like, I need to be cutting back in my business expenses anyway. And I do take a salary out of my business revenue. So, so my household funds do have a impact on my ability to save up for that rental property. And the last thing I want to do is create a slush fund for things like travel, holiday gifts, home repair, that kind of thing. Because right now we're just taking it out of our monthly income, which again, we can afford to do. Like, none of this is going on the credit card. We've gone on trips before and just, the tickets are $2,000. Okay. And we just take it out of, like, you know, the salary for that month because it's there, but it's like, ugh. That could be going to our long-term goal. So I still want to travel, still want to be able to buy gifts for Christmas, you know, all that stuff. Still want to be able to cover home repairs. Like, our AC went out a while ago, and we had to pay like $800 for that. And then we needed a new hot water heater. You know, there's all these like $800, $1,500, $2,000 expenses that we just take out of, like, oh, we'll just take it out of the salary this month. I would like to have a slush fund set aside for that so that, we're not, you know, oh, we're not going to save this month. We're just going to, you know, pay off the hot water heater. You know, I don't want to do that. I would rather have savings, for those specific things in addition to our emergency fund savings, because right now we just have like a big lump sum, like, oh, this is our savings, this is our emergency fund, but we don't want to touch that. So let's do other little savings for little things like travel, holiday gifts, home repairs, etc. So those are the things that I want: pay off student loan, pay off car, get my rental property, have slush fund savings account. Oh, and I want to have investment accounts outside of our retirement. So right now, our sole investments are like our retirement type 401k investments. I want to have more direct, investments that we're more active in. That's not necessarily for retirement. Maybe instead of it being a long-term investment, maybe it's just midterm investment. So I would like to play in the stock market and do different things where over the course of a few years, you know, if things look up, then we're like, oh, okay, we could use this for a vacation, or we could use this to buy another rental property or something. So not necessarily short-term investments, but not ultra long-term either. Things that we could take advantage of within the next 5 to 10 years, and things that we're like actively investing in. So, investment accounts outside of our retirement. So those are the things that I am looking to do, to have, and that I know we won't be able to have unless I tighten up on the finances. But there's a catch to all this. So those are the things that I want. But it's like, how am I going to get it? Well, there are some lifestyle things that are high priority for me. And for a while, I used to beat myself up about this and be like, oh no, we just have to like totally cut this out. But when I would cut it out, you know, months would go by and then I would find myself binging on these things. So now I'm of the mindset that you can still achieve your goals and still live the lifestyle that you want as well. You just have to be smart about how you do it, and you need to be honest about the lifestyle that you want to live and just what's important to you. You only live once, goodness. Like, yes, you want to do things for your future and be responsible with your finances, but, you know, have fun now as well. I think that you can do both. And so the lifestyle things that are still really important to me that I'm going to incorporate while shooting for these goals. One, I am a foodie, okay? I have tried really hard to not like food, to not want to eat out. You know, there's a reason we spend $1,000 on food, which is not good. Like, we're going to cut that out, but there's still got to be a way where we can eat well. And when I say eat well, I don't just mean eating out, but also I still want organic groceries. That's important to me, having healthy food in the fridge. But I also like eating fab meals and checking out the latest restaurant that's new in the city, or, having a nice steak dinner. Like, I like it. Okay. I like it. Other people, like really expensive handbags. You know what? I like food. I've been that way since forever. When I was in high school, all my friends were like getting jobs at the mall so that they can get discounts at the Gap and Forever 21 and stuff. I worked in restaurants because the only discounts I wanted were discounts on food. I'm a foodie. I still want to eat well. So that's a priority for me. And I'll talk in a second about how I'm going to work that out and still hit these financial goals. Also, even though I'm not a huge spender on like shopping and fashion, style and having a nice wardrobe is very important to me. I feel like I've been working on this concept of a capsule wardrobe for like 10 years now. And a capsule wardrobe is where you have like a small curated wardrobe of like amazing clothes that you just really, really love. But style is really important to me because I feel like as a woman, how you present yourself to the world, especially in business, is really important. People do judge you on how you look and how you carry yourself. And I just feel like as a woman, you feel more confident. And your whole demeanor changes when you know you look good and you know what you're wearing fits you well. And, yeah, you're just like impressive. I believe in dressing to impress. And I like looking stylish and on point. That's important to me. So in addition to hitting those goals, I got to figure out a way to do that while still being able to, you know, dress to impress and dress the way I like to dress. And in concert with that wardrobe and making sure that I look presentable as a woman and as a businesswoman, I also like being well-groomed. So I like for my hair to be done. I like for my nails to be done. And I like in general to be well-maintained. So I like working out. I like getting my eyebrows waxed, you know, that kind of stuff. So for me, those are non-negotiables. Again, I've tried to like, oh, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to worry about my wardrobe, or I'm not going to get my eyebrows waxed. Not happening. Or I'm not going to eat out. Like, come on. Those are the things that are important to my lifestyle. And again, I believe that I can have it all. So how? Hey, really quick. In this episode, I'm sharing a lot of different apps and resources that I'm using to tighten up on my money. So if you want to know what those apps are, you can go to thinkandgrowchick.com/moneystory. That's all one word, MoneyStory. thinkandgrowchick.com/moneystory to get the complete list of apps and resources that I'm using to save, to invest, and to overall get my financial life together. Okay, back to the episode. Well, that's what this whole the story of a Black girl and her money series is about, for you to get, you know, a front row seat, a peek into my life and how I'm maintaining this. So now to wrap this up, I'm going to talk about my game plan, how I'm going to tighten up my finances, how I'm going to achieve those things that I want to achieve, and how I'm going to do that while still maintaining the lifestyle elements that are important to me. All right. So in terms of those longer term goals, so, you know, paying off the student loan, paying off my car, getting investment accounts outside of our retirement, buying my first rental property, and creating a slush fund where we save for travel, holiday, and home repairs instead of just taking that out of our monthly income. The first thing I'm going to do to get on that track is to have a monthly handwritten budget. So if you follow me on Instagram, you saw that I went to the Essence Path to Power event, which was this really great event, which is all about finances. I got to take my little sister, which was a lot of fun. And I walked out of there super inspired. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take it back to basics and what has worked. I've had all these like fancy apps to track your budget. I've done spreadsheets, and it's always where either I don't check into the app or I start the spreadsheet and then I get behind, and then, you know, days turn into weeks. And before you know it, like, you know, the budget wasn't adhered to, or I didn't look at it, and it's just too much hassle to try to go back and catch up on the spreadsheet. So I'm like, well, you know, what's something simple I can do where I have no excuse? And really, I look to my mom for this. So my mom is great with finances. She's always able to save for whatever she wants and has always owned her own home. And she's always done great, even as a single mom when she was divorced for a while. She was able to make sure that me and my sister were taken care of and had everything that we needed on just a solo salary. And she has always done this by just handwriting her budget. So my sister was like, yeah, you know, Mom helped me out by showing me how to do a budget on one of those like accounting pads that you get at like Office Max or Staples. And so the technical term for it is a columnar pad. a six column columnar pad. And if you want to check out how to use it to do your budget, you can go on my Instagram and look at my highlights. And I have a money highlight, and I show how to do that in the money highlights. But I was like, you know what? My mom has been doing this for like 30 years and it's always worked for her. She's never had a problem with her finances. So I was like, you know what? I'm taking it back to basics. You know, if she could do it and it worked for her, my grandmother before her always did her budgeting with paper. I mean, they didn't even have the internet or computers back then. And my grandmother owned like six or seven rental properties, you know, coming up, and she managed them herself. She didn't have a property manager or anything back in the day. She worked two jobs on top of that. She always did it by just simple pen and paper. So I'm like, well, I'm gonna do pen and paper at least until I'm consistent with it and really disciplined with it. And then if later I want to go to an app or something like that, we'll approach that when we get there. But for now, I'm sticking with this columnar pad, and I'm going to do my budget monthly handwritten on the first Sunday of the month. And so I'll, you know, bring my husband in on it and we'll have a little family meeting, write everything down by hand. And then that's what we are going to use. The second thing that I'm doing to embark on this journey is leveraging multiple accounts. So part of why budgeting is hard is because you have to keep track of your expenses, and then you have to categorize them, and then you have to ask yourself, okay, so I went to Chipotle and then Target and da da da. Let me add all this stuff up. All right, I said I didn't want to spend more than $100 this week on, you know, food and incidentals. So how much do I have left? Like, you know, asking yourself those questions and adding all that stuff up, it takes time. Yes, I know there's apps that can help you. I'm not a huge fan of financial apps. Not financial apps, but like budgeting apps. I've tried them all. I've tried Mint and YNAB and all of them. And I don't know if I just need to be more hands-on or like physically see it, but I just don't like them. I feel like they miscategorize things. So you spend more time going back and clean up the categories. I just hate it. So now what I'm doing instead is just keeping several checking accounts and savings accounts that are designated for each bucket, and then just treating it like, treating the savings accounts like a budget. So how we do this is we have our one main checking account, which all of our income goes into, and all of our fixed expenses are paid out of that. So cable, internet, the mortgage, etc. All of our fixed expenses are paid out of that. But then we have flex expenses or variable expenses. So things like grocery, dry cleaning, gas, all of that stuff. That is moved into a different checking account. And so the whole goal is the first checking account where all the fixed expenses are, the goal is not to ever swipe that debit card, because all of our expenses automatically come out of that account. So no one should be swiping the debit card on that account. The debit card instead should be swiped on the flex spending account or the variable account where our variable expenses come out of. Now I had just a regular checking account for the variable expenses, but what I've signed up for, and I don't know if it's good or if it'll work, so I'll let you guys know in the next Story of a Black Girl and Her Money episode, but I signed up for a bank account called Simple. And how it works is it does have an app component to it. So I guess I got to eat my words on that one. But it is a checking account, but it's really cool because it has this feature called goals and safe to spend. So what you do is you set a goal and it will determine how much money needs to come out every day or every week or every month or whatever. And so then it will then look at the balance of your checking account and it will deduct whatever you've set as a goal, and that amount, it will tell you that amount is safe to spend. So our biggest problem is we have automatic transfers from our fixed checking account to our flex checking account for grocery, right? So right now we have it set where $175 a week, which is still a lot for two people, I know, but I mean, we're blowing through that. So don't judge me. We're working on it to tighten it up. I would like for that number to be less, but for right now, it's $175 a week for two people. So we transfer that from our fixed account to our flex account. Now, when I see that $175 has landed in the flex checking account, it's real easy for us to be like, oh, you want Chipotle? Oh, I'm just going to go to lunch today. I'm not going to, you know, cook at home or whatever, because money's in the account. And so even though you know some of that money is for grocery, you're like, oh, it's not a big deal. I'll just buy less groceries, you know, and I'll just spend $30 on, you know, this food. But before you know it, you've eaten out so many times that there's only like $50 left for grocery or whatever, and then that's not enough. So I like this idea of this Simple bank account. That's the brand name of the account, Simple, because once you say, hey, my goal is $175 for groceries, it will subtract that from the balance in your checking account, and it will say, okay, this much that's left, that is safe for you to spend. So if you do want to, whatever, go get ice cream or go out to lunch or something like that, you know the true amount that you can actually spend versus just like the amount of money that's in the checking account. So my plan is to use the goals feature, almost like little envelopes. So I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the envelope, but budgeting system, but it's like old school. Like your grandmother would like use cash and would put 100 in the envelope for grocery and 50 in the envelope for dry cleaning or whatever. And when you spent up all the money in the envelope, you were just done. And you just had no more money until the next month or the next 2 weeks or whenever your payday was. Well, I plan on using this goals feature from the Simple bank account the same way, where I'll set up goals or envelopes for each of our flex expenses. So, you know, grocery, dry cleaning, gas, date night, etc. I'll set up goals. And then that way, the way the bank account works, it will tell me what's safe to spend after accounting for the amount that I've set for each of those goals every week. So now no more blowing through the flex checking account just because we see that there's money there. Now I know, oh, just because the flex checking account has $400 in it, well, there's only $90 is safe to spend because the rest has been allocated for grocery and for dry cleaning for those other things. So I just signed up for this Simple account. I'm waiting for the cards and everything to come into the mail. So I'll let you know how that works. But I plan on leveraging multiple accounts to keep track of instead of having to keep track of our spending and like keep track of every little thing. Now it's just like, look, when the goal is spent or when the envelope is spent and all the money for the grocery or for whatever is gone, we just don't spend any more money until, the next time we get paid or, you know, whatever the frequency is. Also, I plan on using leveraging multiple savings account. So I talked about that slush fund and how instead of just pulling the money out of our monthly income, if we have like an unexpected home repair or we want to go on a trip or something like that, I would like to save and plan for that in advance. Well, I have quite a few Capital One 360 accounts. I really like them because you can nickname them. So you can nickname them like Italy or Christmas gifts or whatever. And so I have like one or two, but my plan is to open up like five or six of them and label them all according to the various slush fund savings that I want to save for. And I think Capital One will let you open up to like up to 25, and they're all linked. So you can just log in once and you can see all of your savings accounts. You can have them all labeled according to whatever it is that you're saving for. So I plan on leveraging multiple accounts plus our handwritten budget in order to keep on track with our long-term goals. Now, for investments, I need to talk to our financial planner. He set up some of our accounts, and so we do have to sit with him and get serious about like our investment accounts or whatever. But in the meantime, just in terms of those fund investments that I said I wanted outside of our 401ks and our retirement, that would serve as like midterm, so not long term, not short term, but maybe like 5 to 10 years. I discovered this app that's really cool that's called Acorns. And so what Acorns does is it takes your spare change. So let's say you went to lunch and it was $13 and 52 cents. It will take 48 cents and invest it for you. And so it doesn't sound like a lot, but over time, you can end up saving a lot of money. Plus, when you add regularly scheduled investments, so it does have the ability for you to say, in addition to you investing my spare change, I also want you to withdraw $100 from my checking account every month and invest that. You know, between the regular regularly scheduled investments plus the spare change, that's a lot of money that you can use to invest. And so I think it'll be really fun to just have this account going again for 5 to 10 years and then see how much we have and use that for a trip or buying the next car or helping with a down payment on next rental property or something like that. So we're not taking out from our retirement, but we're still leveraging the power of investments to get to our goal. So I'm really excited about this Acorns app. I've been using it for like 2 weeks. And it works. I really like the roundup feature. That's really cool. So definitely encourage you to check that out. And what else? Oh, for the rental property. So I mentioned, plan on paying for that out of my business revenue. But in order to drastically cut back on my business revenue, I'm, instead of doing like full-time employees and all of those expensive subscriptions and services I was using, now I'm leveraging contractors, interns, and other types of services that help. So Intern Queen is a great website. Shout out to Jordan Gill, who told me about it. If you want to find interns who are really interested in working in your business, it's like a legit intern website. And so you could have someone, you know, instead of paying, you know, a salary for social media or whatever, find an intern, you know, for 90 days to help you get that set up. So you can get unpaid interns, you can get, you know, a stipend for your intern or whatever. And so it's drastically less expensive than having to hire someone in order to do that. Also, I mean, there's always overseas contractors, which I really enjoy using. I find that finding contractors from the Philippines works really well. They speak great English. Culturally, they're just really awesome in terms of online work. And a lot of times they only need like $3 to $5 an hour for work. So a website that I really enjoy using is onlinejobs.ph in order to find those contractors. And another thing that I found that is so cool, exploring it right now, I'll let you know how it works, is this service/app thing called Finn. So F-I-N, Finn. And basically it's like a virtual personal assistant. And so, and again, instead of hiring a personal assistant, you know, and paying them $16 an hour or whatever to book hotels for you and to organize your email and all of that stuff, Finn will let you either do where you just pay by the service. So if you hire Finn to look for travel for you or something like that, you just pay for the time that you've used. Or you can do a monthly subscription. I think it's like $270 a month, which is not bad if you're using it for business. And then you get a certain amount of credits where you can use this service, Finn, in order to get all of your personal assisting needs taken care of. So I'm playing around with it. So far, I like it. So definitely check that out if you want to see how it works. So yeah, that's how I plan on doing our long-term goals and getting that taken care of. And for the other stuff, like paying off the student loan and paying off my car, we just gotta stop eating out so much and, again, cutting back on things that don't matter and using that money to further accelerate paying down on the student loan and the car debt. Now, let's talk about those lifestyle goals, because I know when you were listening to me say, oh yeah, I still want to eat out and I still want to have a nice wardrobe, you're probably rolling your eyes like, girl, how are you going to, you know, manage all of that? It can be done. So in terms of the food, the commitment that I've made to still eat at really nice restaurants but not break the bank is to take advantage of happy hours for discounted meals. Ruth Chris and Morton Steakhouse have great happy hours. You can get like steak and sliders and burgers and different things for pretty cheap. So I plan on just stalking every happy hour in the Dallas area and taking advantage of those, like, oh, $7 sliders. Or I saw one that was like $2 tacos. I'm like, are you kidding me? At a really nice, like, high-end Southwestern, like, Mexican restaurant. So I'm going to take advantage of happy hours. Also, I'm going to take advantage of services like Groupon and restaurant.com. Groupon, everybody knows Groupon. So using more Groupons to try out different restaurants in the city for the cheap. But restaurant.com is really cool in that you can buy these gift certificates at your favorite restaurants for way cheap, sometimes less than half off. So for instance, I saw one today where you can get a $50 gift certificate to this really nice steak restaurant. All you have to pay is $15. For the $50 gift certificate. So you buy the gift certificate, you go to the restaurant, and you can order up to $50 worth of food, but you only paid $15 for the gift certificate. So definitely going to take advantage of restaurant.com. Also, I'm going to take advantage of this app that I recently found out about called Dosh. So that's D as in David, O-S-H. And it's great because it gives you cash back for everything. And it tells you restaurants in your neighborhood that are giving cash back. And a lot of the cash back is pretty good. It's like 5% cash back. So if you're going to go out to eat anyway, and let's say you were going to spend, $50 eating out, well, you can get 5% cash back on a restaurant that you were already going to eat at. And so that's really cool because if you don't know what restaurant you want to go to, you can look at the app and say, well, you know, I wasn't sure where to eat, but I'm going to eat at this specific restaurant because they're offering cash back. So that will eliminate a lot of that. Well, I don't know what I want to eat. What do you want to eat? Does anybody else do that? Me and my husband were terrible at that. He's like, what do you want to eat? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you want to eat? He's like, I don't know. What do you want to eat? Well, now I can just look at the Dosh app and be like, we're eating at the place that gives us cash back. And so I plan on using the cash back to go towards that slush fund for travel and home repairs and holiday events and different things like that. In terms of our organic food, which can be pretty expensive, so excited. So Prime now, because you know Amazon bought Whole Foods, Prime is now offering not only 2-hour pickup at Whole Foods, but you can get discounts for being a Prime member and shopping at Whole Foods versus if you weren't a Prime member. And I am a Prime member because I'm obsessed with Amazon and I definitely pay that annual subscription. It's totally worth it. So plan on using my Prime to get discounts at Whole Foods and getting organic food. But also both Kroger and Walmart have these cool pickup things now where you can order online and pick up within a certain window. And quiet as it's kept, both Kroger and Walmart do have organic produce and some organic meat. So I plan on doing the bulk of my shopping probably at Kroger, a little bit of Walmart, and then the really high-end stuff, so maybe like steak or different things that I just prefer to get at Whole Foods because of the quality, I'll use Prime to get discounts from there. So that's how I plan on taking advantage of still being able to eat really good but still keeping my finances in check. In terms of my wardrobe and wanting to still shop, so how I plan on doing this is doing it through consignment stores, which I am pretty good at. I love a good consignment store and thrift shopping. But again, just being more strict on that, because I have gotten kind of loose with like, oh, this is cute. Yeah, I know it's not on sale, but I'm going to buy it anyway. No more. So my rules are no more buying anything that's not on sale. I don't believe you should ever pay full price for clothing. So if it's not on sale, I'm not going to buy it. But also giving myself a limit. So I'm not allowing myself to spend more than $150 on any particular clothing item. And I want to spend way less than that. My goal is to spend no more than $50 on a particular clothing item, but I'm giving myself up to $150 because I know sometimes, specifically with like shoes or, like outerwear, coats or, certain types of clothing items, you do want to spend a little more. Because the quality is better. But I mean, if I can get it for high quality and under $50, that's the goal. So $50 with the ability to splurge up to $150 to help me keep that in check. And also, just making sure that I'm looking at stores that I ordinarily wouldn't have looked at for shopping. For instance, Target. The other day I was in a super Target and I was like buying groceries and I had no idea that Who What Wear, the clothing brand Who What Wear, even had a collaboration with Target, but they had the cutest jumper. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is adorable. And so I went home and went online and started looking at Target clothes, and they have really nice shoes, really stylish, trendy outfits and things. So I'm like, what? I'm going to take advantage of Target. And the cool thing is with Target, you can compound it by using the Dosh app, because the Dosh app will also give you cash back sometimes at Target. And then there's Ebates. So that's like rebates, but it's called Ebates. Target always has Ebates deals where if you buy online at Target, but you use Ebates, you get cash back. So now it's like, oh, I can still take advantage of my shopping, but I'm shopping at stores that are more affordable and I'm getting cash back on top of that. So that's how I plan on doing that. So only buying things on sale, taking advantage of consignment stores, using discount stores that I ordinarily wouldn't shop at, like Target, also taking advantage of, Marshall's, TJ Maxx, places like that, and using these rebate apps or these cashback apps, so both Dosh and Ebates, to get cash back for the clothing that I was already going to buy. And then when it comes to being well-maintained or being a quote-unquote high-maintenance woman and wanting my nails done and my eyebrows waxed and that kind of thing, I'm committing to, one, doing my hair myself. So I don't really get my hair done. I did get my hair colored like 2 years ago, but I colored it back myself using a $12 color kit I found at Target. So I'm committing to 100% just doing my hair myself. Maybe I'll allow myself to get my hair done once a year, where I get it straightened and trimmed, but for everything else, I can do it myself. And for waxes and for getting my nails done, I'm going to be using Groupon. So before I had like, you know, favorite eyebrow place or favorite nail place in my neighborhood, but they're pretty expensive. Like, again, don't judge me, but I got a pedicure and a next gen dip manicure. After tip, it was $80 for both of those, which is like crazy expensive for a manicure and a pedicure. So I definitely don't want to be spending $80, you know, every month for that. So I'm going to be taking advantage of Groupon. So hopefully I can get it done for like $30 instead. Did it with eyebrows. Instead of paying $15 or $20 to get my eyebrows done, I'm going to use Groupon and see if I can get it done for $8 or $10. And also I plan on stretching, especially the eyebrows. So, you know, just tweezing my eyebrows myself and letting it, you know, not going more than, not going every 2 weeks. So just allowing myself to go like maybe once a month or, you know, in order to stretch out my expenses. In terms of workouts, I was paying a lot of money for going to all these different workout, what do they call it? Like class pass and, you know, like these workout classes. But now I'm committed to using free and low cost workouts. So one, I'm going to be using my neighborhood gym because it's free for us. If you are a resident of our neighborhood, to use the rec center. So working out at the rec center, they have HIIT workouts, they have spin classes, but I was spending a bunch of money to go to other spin classes because I liked, you know, like SoulCycle and stuff like that. I like the ambiance, but now I'm like, girl, whatever. Go to your neighborhood gym and let someone from the rec center do their spin class. Also taking advantage of YouTube and various apps on iPhone that you can use to like Nike Training Club, totally free. Get those workouts done. And then also taking advantage of in-store and local workouts. So I know like Lululemon, they have some like once a month, they'll have like free yoga. The Nike store sometimes have free workouts. And in Dallas, they always have some sort of like free yoga or free run. There's like a CrossFit company here that lets you do CrossFit for free once a month. So just taking advantage of those things instead of spending money on workout classes. So that's all I have for you today. We are right at an hour, so I'm going to go ahead and land this plane and get back to planning my finances. But thanks so much for listening and for joining me on this journey. Again, if you want the complete list of all the apps and resources that I mentioned in today's episode, go to thinkandgrowchick.com/moneystory. MoneyStory, in order to get the complete list. And if you want to be the first to know when new The Story of a Black Girl and Her Money episodes come out, as well as all the other Think and Grow Chick episodes that I do, make sure that you are subscribed to me here on iTunes, SoundCloud, or whatever it is you get your podcast. So with that, I will talk to you in the next episode. Bye-bye. Hey, I know this podcast episode has come to a close, but don't be sad. You know your girl's got way more where that came from. In fact, I have something that I know you are going to love. So not too long ago, I took some of my favorite podcast episodes and I compiled them into, what, a mixtape. That's right, a mixtape. So I know you love listening to my podcast in the car, in the gym, while washing the dishes or doing whatever it is that you do, maybe while at work. Well, here is something that you're going to love even more. So you can get this mixtape that has all of my best podcast episodes all chopped up with some really cool music. You can get all your inspiration that you need. Plus, you can get a full version of the official Think and Grow Chick theme song, which you heard at the beginning of this episode, by going to thinkandgrowchick.com/mixtape. That's thinkandgrowchick.com/mixtape. So I'm super excited for you to hear this mixtape. It's amazing and it's going to keep you motivated until my next podcast episode. See you next time. Bye. Never give up on my goal. Working and pushing, and I'm not going to stop till it's gold. I know.
time to enjoy.